the Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee, and we will open a work session on House Bill 2525. And Janet, can you get us started, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2525 is the bill that original bill would have prohibited recovery in arbitration or court action for a construction defect if the owner rejected an offer of a contractor, a subcontractor, or a supplier to remedy the defect. There were amendments at the hearing on the bill, the dash 2 amendments, and today you have the dash 3 amendments. There was discussion by the Department of Justice, by home builders and construction contractors boards in the between meetings, and you now have the dash 3 amendments. Katie Hand engrossed those into the bill, and Scott Berry from home builders is here to explain the difference.
Thank you, Janet. Scott, please.
Good morning, members of the committee. Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders Association, and this is a bill that came to you last week and had a number of concerns. I think we've taken care of quite a few of those, and I just wanted to kind of run you through, I think, quickly the reason we're here, and then again what the dash 3 amendments do. General liability insurance for construction contractors has skyrocketed, according to the Construction Contractors Board numbers, from 150 to 250% over the last 4 years, every year increasing by that amount, and for some folks as high as 1,000% in a single year. So last session brought forward Senate Bill 909, allowing the contractor to go out and view a project and make an offer to repair. Unfortunately, what we found from Senate Bill 909 was that many of those offers to repair were rejected, and instead the claim just went on to court. The purpose of 2525, which is before you today, is to set up a process that allows for a potentially more drawn out opportunity for the two parties to come together through mediation, through arbitration, or potentially through a contested case hearing. The opportunity is still there for that individual, that homeowner, to step outside the process after the mediation and enter the court system if they feel they're not being treated fairly by the arbitration or construction contractors board system that's set up through House Bill 2525. For the builder, it gives the opportunity for that individual or company to go out and fix the problem at their own cost, which is tremendously under the cost of having even a third party go out and fix it. And finally, for the builder, avoiding a claim by fixing the problem means they'll be able to reinsure themselves the next cycle for the next year. And that has been a problem, as well as just getting insurance at 150 to 250% increase. Being able to get insurance at all has been a problem for a number of our contractors and has driven some of them out of business. So, again, the idea behind this bill, get the two parties together, has worked so well with the Construction Contractors Board process during the first year of construction or after construction today, getting those two parties together and sending them towards a mediation arbitration process instead of off to court. And that's kind of what the dash 3s do. Once the mediation fails, if it does, and certainly we're hoping that it's successful, the consumer then has four options. They can step outside the process and go through the court system. And we have talked about with the other members of the group we've been working with, the trial lawyers, what sort of penalty they might have. And to enter this arbitration system, there's a $150 fee. Both sides pay that fee to enter. And today, I think under the dash 3s, what ends up happening is the contractor would then recover that $150 they paid in if the consumer goes outside the process and does not do better than they did under the mediation. So an offer comes from the contractor's board through to the consumer and the contractor. The contractor accepts it. The consumer rejects it and steps outside the process. They go to court. They spend another $20,000, $30,000 in attorney's fees. They don't do any better than the original arbitration or mediation offer. They might be then responsible for that initial fee that was paid. It's not much of a penalty, and we're still in conversation with what penalties might be out there. If they don't go that route, there are three other options still available. They can ask for a contested case hearing under the bill. They can ask for binding arbitration through the Construction Contractors Board. Or in some contracts that exist today between the original homeowner and the buyer, there is binding arbitration in the contracts already. At that point, if they get to mediation and don't want to move into a contractor's board system or want to move forward, they would be required to go with that, what they originally signed in their contract, which is binding arbitration. So those are the four options once that consumer gets to the mediation and doesn't agree with the findings of the third-party investigator and mediator through the contractor's board.
Representative Escobar.
How does this work in conjunction with what was that Senate Bill 909 of... two sessions ago, maybe?
It's last session that we passed Senate Bill 909, and that's notice and opportunity to repair, and that
correct.
And it fits in actually with that process.
That couple in pretty well
it couples
that.
In very nicely. The homeowner will still notice the contractor of intent to file a claim. They will then prepare a list of their concerns. That list will go to the contractor. The contractor will come out and view the property, have an opportunity to inspect the property, and then make an offer back to that homeowner to fix a certain part. That's where 909 ended. At that point, the homeowner could say, nope, even though you're offering to repair all this stuff I put on the list, I'm rejecting that, I'm going off to court. And really, that's the reason behind House Bill 2525, is to give that contractor more of an opportunity through this mediation to actually get out and fix the problem they're saying they're intending and wanting to fix and not go to court. And if that's then rejected, those four options that I laid before you a few minutes ago are then available to the consumer.
Any questions? Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Scott, I think I see in here that there is some deadline, but I'm not sure. So if the contractor who was working on my house, they have to fix the problem by a certain time, and then I could go to court, or?
Yeah, Chair Brown, Representative Shields, Senate Bill 909 from last session, as well as House Bill 2525, sets out parameters that both parties have to meet. But if the contractor at any point doesn't meet those timelines, either for notice, for repairs that they have said they will do, the process is terminated, and the consumer can then immediately proceed with their claim in court.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Thank you, Scott. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 2525? Please come forward.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kevin Neely. I'm with the Oregon Department of Justice, representing Attorney General Hardy Myers. We have had a very short period of time, as you have, to look at the Dash 3 amendments. We still do have some concerns with the Dash 3 amendments. Our principal concerns are the concerns I shared with you just about a week ago, and that is that it appears to us, again, in our very early review of this, that there still is really an excessive burden placed on the consumer. We think that Mr. Berry is headed in the right direction. We've had some fruitful discussions with him, and it looks like we're trying to get to some fairly even ground here, but we're not sure the Dash 3 amendments get us there. Our principal concern is that it's not clear to us that the consumer isn't responsible for paying the entire cost of the arbitration, only in those instances in which they leave the arbitration process and get essentially a worse deal. It looks to us like, in fact, these might require the consumer to pay at any point if they leave the arbitration. Again, that might just be a simple error in drafting or again, something that we can fix easily. But again, we have some real questions about whether or not the actual language in the text does what Mr. Berry asserted that they did, and again, what I believe we were trying to get to when we had our discussions. Additionally, it appears to us that one of the key features of this bill, which doesn't essentially, if a consumer at the front end doesn't agree to make the changes or to use the contractor to make the changes, you go through this whole process, you don't come to middle ground through the process, the consumer then can't bring a court case to recover the cost of the loss based on the initial problem that the consumer identified. So as we've talked about here, the whole point of this bill is the consumer identifies a problem, they get back to the contractor. The contractor, as 909 did, has the right to repair it. If the consumer then says, no, I don't want you to repair it, and I think I went over in my first testimony a whole bunch of reasons for that, then you enter into this process that was just described fairly well by Mr. Berry. If you come out the back end of the process and you still don't have an agreement, our concern is that it looks like, based on our read of this bill, that the consumer wouldn't have a remedy for any of those repairs that the contractor had offered to fix. Again, that's our take on this bill. We've only had but a couple of hours to review these amendments. We are perfectly happy to keep working with Mr. Berry, but wanted to alert the committee if they do choose to move this bill out today, which we're not against. There is still a little bit of work that needs to be done, and again, I can't tell if it's just a quick fix on a drafting error or if it is some substantive work that still needs to be done. But those are our key concerns. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions as best I can.
Representative Shaw.
You know, Mr. Neely, I really appreciate your effort and your willingness to work with them, and I hope that some kind of conclusion and solution does come to this drafting. But in my experience as a contractor, and I never had, in 8 years, I didn't have a client claim filed against me, and a lot of times I'd just bent over backwards and lost money just pleasing people that probably in all likelihood were never going to be pleased. And that doesn't mean there aren't. This bill, in my opinion, is addressing problems with good faith contractors have with some customers. And almost all these things never even see the light of day publicly because the good contractors do take care of business. We talk about remedies to some people that have a claim. I used to do a lot of sidewalk repair, but I got frustrated with that for a lot of reasons, and I won't talk about street trees today, but one of the reasons people would call me out to fix their sidewalk is because their sidewalk collapsed, because the people that came in and did the sewer undermined the sidewalk, hooked their sewer up, didn't backfill it properly, it collapsed. These contractors were not in good faith. They're gone. And the remedy was, the burden is, to this day it's going on the homeowner. And we're not going to find a perfect solution to remedying people's problems when it comes to scoff laws and deadbeats that just don't care about the law. This is trying to address problems with contractors that act in good faith, with consumers who have a problem with a good faith contractor. And I really have to say, if you're a consumer, it doesn't matter how many laws we pile up, the burden will always, always rest on the consumer in the end when we're talking about scoff laws. Now, that does not mean to say that I disrespect your opinion. I agree with you. I am concerned about this too. But I think this is dealing, in my opinion, this is trying to address some problems with contractors that work in good faith, good, reputable contractors out there that are trying to make a process that's fair for everybody. So I'll shut up there, Mr. Chair, but I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Kristen, you look like you want to comment.
I just wanted to let everyone know, Kristen Leonard with the Trial Lawyers Association. I handed out written testimony from our legislative chair. We wanted to kind of tell the committee that we have been working very hard with the Home Builders Association. The amendments did not come out exactly as I think we all anticipated, Mr. Berry included. And so we would be more than happy if you were to move this bill. We'll continue to work together. We think it's some drafting errors that we just need to really work on in the Senate. And we give specifics here in the written testimony, but we just wanted to put that on the record that at this point in time, we can't necessarily support this bill as it is with the -3 amendments, but we think that those changes can be made in the Senate and feel very comfortable with the process as it's been working so far. So,
thank you. Representative Holby.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. See, I have one question. I respect what Representative Schaffler had to say about the good faith contractors, and, you know, I'm sure that 95% of contractors are good faith, but in the case of a bad faith contractor, you know, is the homeowner obligated to go through this process if at the front end, if he's just not happy with the contractor? Can, in this bill, can he just say, this contract's over, I'm seeking my remedy through the courts, and just bail out of this if this bill were in place?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holby, the answer to that is yes, the consumer could do that, and that, in fact, gets to the root of the concern that the Department of Justice has. If the consumer opts to not, essentially not use the contractor and not have those repairs done, our concern is that there appears to be very little remedy for the consumer to actually recover any of the loss that the consumer sustained in some court of law. This bill, as it's written, appears to preclude that. So the answer to your question is, yeah, the consumer can say, I am done with this contractor, I am dissatisfied, this person really was not a reputable contractor, and I need to go get this work done somewhere else. This is the fourth time that he or she has tried to fix the problem. Our concern is that what this bill does is, if you choose not to go into that arbitration process, it may well preclude you from filing a claim in court to recover the damages as a result of that bad contracting.
Thank you.
And if I could add to that, Chair Brown and Representative Holvey, one of the other issues that the trial lawyers originally brought to this table as far as a concern is if a relationship is somewhat beyond repair as well between a contractor and the consumer. And so one of the things that we spend a lot of time talking about is not just the scope of the work that needs to be done, but a decision always also being made to this mediation process as to who will do the work, as to whether it is the original contractor or if someone else needs to come in and complete those repairs. So getting at a consumer's issue if they just feel they can no longer work with a particular contractor.
In listening, it would appear that all three of you that have testified are wanting to get to the same spot, and they're very close to being there. Is that right?
I think, Chair Brown, we all recognize the tremendous burden that contractors are on. I know the Attorney General does in terms of trying to get their insurance and their bonds, and we'd like to do what we can to try and rectify that situation, remedy it. We just don't want to do it on the backs of consumers, and there may well be a way to do that, at least starting on even ground.
I think we're close, and we would like to continue to work together. So for 9 pages of amendments, I think we're getting there, and we just still feel that there are a few things that need to be changed. But, yes, we'd like to keep working on it. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, committee, the chair would like to move this bill. I know we've had a policy of not sending things on that need some further work, but our time is running short, and I think there's a very important issue that needs to be dealt with, and I would like to move it on to the floor and on to the Senate to hopefully to get it amended and taken care of. Representative Schaffler.
And we are using, Mr. Chair, we're the -3 amendments?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the -3 amendments to House Bill 2525.
Representative Schaffler moves that we dash the -3 amendments. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Holby.
I'm going to vote to move this to the floor, but as a courtesy, I may be voting no on it on the floor.
Thank you, Representative. The -3s are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move we send House Bill 2525 as amended to the House floor. We do pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves House Bill 2525 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Shield.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too would like to get my concerns on the record. I hope that the parties will move forward on fixing that problem, but I will be voting yes, and we'll think about this carefully with Representative Fulvey when it gets to the floor.
Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Regardless of me being late, I'm very familiar with the bill, so wanted to get my comments on record. I will not be relying on Representative Holvey, however, for my decision-making process, for the record. But if the bill as is, even with the dash...
I'd be worried if you did.
The dash three amendments don't entirely alleviate my concern that I expressed prior. So I'll vote yes with the same reasons that Representative Shields will be voting yes. Not Representative Holvey, but Representative Shields will be voting yes. And that if, in fact, this bill does not come back changed, I will vote no and vote not to concur when it comes back from the Senate. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Representative Holvey, you can be assured that I respect your opinion.
As well as I do.
I'll join in on that.
Katie, will you call the roll, please?
Representative
Esposito.
Aye.
Representative Gilbert.
Aye.
Representative
Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Kitts.
Aye.
Representative
Kitts. Despite Representative Kitts' best attempt to talk me into voting no, I'm still going to vote aye.
Aye. Chair. Aye. Motion carried. Need a carrier on the floor.
Representative Holvey.
Representative Escobar agreed to carry the ball. The bill on the floor for the ball. Okay, again, where are we at now? Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2596. Janet, can you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2596 was introduced by Representative Wisnett, and you had a hearing on May 6th. You should have the dash four amendments at your place. There was a discussion about the dash three amendments from the engineers association, and the dash four amendments include an extra sentence or part of a sentence on the lines 14 and 15 that says after consultation with the electrical and elevator board and the State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying. The addition of the State Board of Examiners for Engineering and Land Surveying is a change that was added in the Dash 4 amendments. This bill does allow the Department of Consumer and Business Services to adopt rules in consultation with the Electrical and Elevator Board to designate classes of electrical licenses that may design, plan, and lay out non-complex electrical installations without additional certifications. So,
thank you, Janet. Jared?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, Jared Broadfoot, representing the National Electrical Contractors Association and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. We did work with the engineers and were able to reach a compromise with them to where they would be consulted with as well, along with the Electrical and Elevator Board, on rules adopted under this, under these amendments. So we did reach an agreement, and we're happy to ask you to adopt the Dash 4 amendments to the bill and move it to the floor.
Thank you, Jared. Any questions? Don't see any. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else would like to testify on 2596? Don't see any. He's not here. Yeah. Probably by choice. the chair would entertain a motion to adopt the Dash 4.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt Dash 4 as to House Bill 2596.
Representative Schaffler moves that we adopt the Dash 4 as to House Bill 2596. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move we send House Bill 2596 to the House floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Schaffler moves House Bill 2596 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, you call the roll, please.
Representative
Holvey. Aye.
Representative Holvey.
Aye.
Representative Kitts. Excuse.
Representative
Shockley. Aye.
Representative
Shields. Aye.
Aye. Motion carries.
Mr. Chair, do you think this needs explanation on the floor, or should we send consent calendar?
Oops. I think it needs explanation.
Okay.
Who would like to carry that?
I'll do it, Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler will carry the bill, then. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, sir.
Open a public hearing on House Bill, or Senate Bill 433. Janet? Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 433 was sponsored by the Committee on Commerce in the Senate at the request of the Oregon Trucking Association, and it would clarify that for-hire truck owner-operators are not subject to workers' compensation requirements. Current law states that trucking owner-operators who haul logs, poles, or pilings, and those transporting rock, gravel, sand, dirt, and asphalt are non-subject workers for workers' comp, but truck owner-operators who haul other items are not treated the same. That's all I have, Mr. Chair, and the bill did not have any amendments in the Senate, I don't believe.
Thank you, Janet. Bob Russell, please.
The Senate amendments clarified that the provisions apply to interstate commerce truck owner operators as well as interstate.
Okay. Thank you, Janet.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Association. This is another sort of twist on the perennial independent contractor issue. Although the ones we're talking about, we call owner-operators. An owner-operator generally owns his or her own truck, and they drive the truck as well. And they will lease the truck and the driver to a for-hire trucking company. There's a great deal of confusion about whether these particular independent contractors are subject to workers' comp today. And they are clearly exempt from employee withholding for Oregon income tax, federal income tax. They're also exempt from unemployment insurance. But when it comes to workers' compensation, some insurance companies say that they're subject workers and charge premiums. Others do not. When I talk with my larger members, a lot of those folks are self-insured, and I found that the same confusion existed with them. Some of them insured their owner-operators, and others did not. Often when a trucking company finds out what the insurance company's policy is regarding owner-operators is when the auditors come to visit, and that can be a very unpleasant surprise. In some instances, it's actually put companies out of business because it was several years after the fact and they owed considerable amounts in premiums. As Janet said, owner-operators driving log trucks and dump trucks are currently considered non-subject workers. We crafted this exemption very carefully. It has to do with owner-operators that are leased to for-hire trucking companies. And we provided a bright-line test because these for-hire trucking companies have to have a certificate or permit issued by the Department of Transportation. So anyone that questions whether these folks are subject or non-subject workers, all they have to do is call the Department of Transportation, find out if the trucking company's got a certificate or permit, and it becomes very clear. We also did not want to cover certain workers. For example, folks that are delivering pizzas, people that may be taking the bank deposit to the bank or picking up the mail. And that's why we were very careful to say this only applies for hire trucking companies. This concept was unanimously approved by MLAC back in January. It unanimously passed out of the Senate Commerce Committee and it unanimously passed off the floor of the Senate. And I urge your support. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
How come, Bob, how come they got left out to start with?
You know, I don't really know the answer to that. I really don't. It wasn't until this interim that one of my members came to me and said, you know, this doesn't make any sense. And clearly it didn't. And by the level of support, you can see that it didn't make any sense and making the change, in fact, is a positive thing.
Any questions? Don't see any. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 433? Seeing none, I'll close the hearing on House or Senate Bill 433 and open a work session on Senate Bill 433. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend that we send Senate Bill 433 engrossed to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Esquivel moves Senate Bill 433 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, call the roll.
Representative
Colby. Aye.
Representative
Kitchell. I'm an aye also.
Aye.
Representative
Hill. Aye.
Representative
Esquivel.
Aye.
Representative
Kelly. Aye.
Mayor Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I recommend that we put this on the consent calendar in the upcoming floor session.
Representative Esquivel moves that we place Senate Bill 433 on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it's on the consent calendar.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schaffler.
Whoever.
Who are you?
I move we suspend the rules to allow Representative Kitts to vote for House Bill 2596, and I will tell the good representative that I think Representative Holvey voted for it.
Representative Schaffler moves the rules be suspended to allow Representative Kitts to vote on House Bill 2596. Is there any objection? Seeing none, well. Representative Kitts, how do you vote?
In light of these new facts, knowing that Representative Holvey voted yes, I'm a yes.
Representative Kitts votes yes. Let's see. We're down to open public hearing on Senate Bill 81. Janet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 81 was pre-session filed by the Governor for the Public Utility Commission. The bill would allow a public utility to charge a customer a different rate for energy if the difference arises from an optional schedule or tariff that takes into account a customer's past energy usage and provides price incentives designed to encourage changes in the customer's energy usage.
What do we do when no one signs up to it?
That's important, huh?
Lee, would you like to testify on
Well, that's in Washington.
Mr. Chair, we just thought it was such a good idea, I didn't even need testimony. Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, I'm Lee Beyer. I'm the chairman of the Oregon Public Utility Commission, and I'm here to speak on 81 and 84 in a minute. This bill, along with the other one we'll talk about in a minute, are simple little administrative adjustments to the statutes to provide the commission with a little more flexibility so that we can hopefully save consumers some money. What 81 does is it deals with, as Janet said, the term in the current law that says that we can't have discriminatory laws. I mean, it, essentially what that means is everybody's supposed to pay their fair share so that treatment is the same. The situation that we're trying to deal with is what we call demand-side management. And in essence, what that is that we're at the point with all of the three utilities we regulate where they're going to have to add additional resources to meet growing demand if we can't taper that demand a little bit. What this would allow us to do, and I've given you a couple of examples in the paper I've handed out, is if, for example, with a residential customer, if we were able to go to them, the utility were able to go to them and say, if you can cut the electricity that you use during peak times or during times back, we can give you a credit for that because that precludes our need to buy additional power. On the industrial side, an example, you could go to an industry and say, if you're able to ramp back your usage during high peak times, we can give you a discounted rate for that because that will save all customers money. Those are just two examples. The bill doesn't specifically say what we would do. It just gives the commission the authority to work with industry to try to achieve those objectives of putting off trying to build a lot of new load that isn't needed for peak periods. So that's it, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions on that.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative.
Just for the record, Ms. Byer, none of the consumer groups, either industrial customers or CUB, have any problem with this?
Not to my knowledge. They didn't have when we were discussing it on the Senate side. Generally, demand-side savings activities like this are strongly supported by the consumer groups.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Don't see any. Lee, just stay put, and we'll close the hearing on Senate Bill 81 and open the hearing on Senate Bill 84. Okay. Janet?
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 84 would allow net metering for electrical utility customers that have facilities which generate electricity, such as biomass generation, solar power, wind power, and hydroelectric power. Senate Bill 84 adds biomass fuels to the list of allowable generating facilities, and the idea is the customer generates the power and, in effect, sells it to the utility, and the utility gives them power when they aren't generating. And biomass fuels was not on the list of allowable generating facilities. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, Lee Byer, Chairman of the Public Utility Commission. 84 deals with, as Janet said, net metering. And the intent here, obviously, is to encourage people where they can to do self-generation at their own site, because it's cheaper, generally, if you don't have to pay for transmission and all that, and adds to stability of the grid. We currently have net metering in statute. It applies across the board to both consumer-owned and private utilities. This bill addresses it in two ways. One, to the list of allowable generation, it adds biomass, which I know has been an issue of discussion in the legislature this time. Generally, when people think of this, they're thinking about using wood waste as a generating source, but it can be other things besides that, agricultural waste. Besides adding that, the other thing that it does is it allows permission for the commission for the private utilities to increase the cap that's in place now. Currently, the law says is that a utility, either consumer-owned or private, must buy this resource from its customers up to 25 kilowatts. The consumer-owned, because they operate under the direction of their own boards of directors, can go above that. The three private utilities cannot without PUC action, and we don't have the authority now to allow them to do that. What this does is it allows us, through administrative rule, where it makes sense, to go above that. We'd still have to go through a rulemaking process and have participation, but that's essentially what it does, those two things.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? I don't see any.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Scott Golden.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Bolton. I represent Pacific Power. I provided to the committee a brief statement of support regarding this bill. I'll keep my comments even briefer. It's a good bill, and we support it. Essentially, net metering is a practice that we see growing across our service territory in Oregon as well as other states. And as new technologies and new types of facilities are brought into consumers' hands, the technical standards often change, and so we believe that the PUC really is the proper venue to discuss net metering policies and put together the policies that IOUs or investor-owned utilities should follow when putting these on. And net metering being a small but important piece of renewable energy policy is something that there's been a lot of discussion about this session, and something that we wholeheartedly support. So if you have any questions, be happy to field those. But this is a bill that we've supported since it's brought to our attention by the PUC.
Thank you, Scott. Any questions? I don't see any. Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 84? And then I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 84 and open a work session on Senate Bill 84. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 84 to the floor with a D-class recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 84 to the floor with a D-class recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Katie, call the roll.
Representative
Kitts. Aye.
Representative
Chalmers.
Aye.
Representative
Gaskell. Aye.
Representative Gettman.
Aye.
Representative
Polby.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carried. Representative Kitts.
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 84 on the consent calendar.
Representative Kitts moves Senate Bill 84 be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any objection? Seeing none, it's on the consent calendar. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to introduce the committee to my confident political consultant and best friend, my wife, Shelda Holmes, who's joined in.
Mr. Chair,
give her a hearty welcome.
Are you asking for courtesies of the committee?
Mr. Chair,
I
was just wondering why Chip was in such good behavior today.
He sounded so smart today, Mr. Chair.
I wrote him down before the committee.
Don't believe those comments. He's always very sharp, very polite, good member of the committee.
And a great American at that.
We're going to let you off a little early today, but Friday morning we're going to start at 8 o'clock. And we've got a very, very full menu.
I think I'd like to filibuster the rest of that.
8 o'clock. There's people alive at 8 o'clock.
That's just a public hearing at 8 o'clock, though, right?
Four sessions starts at 10 o'clock also, Friday.
Yeah.
And with that, we are adjourned.
Doubles coming up.